Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Mouth.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. Self-described NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden did not board a Cuba-bound flight from Moscow today. Snowden has applied for asylum in Ecuador, but in a wry twist, the man who says the government is collecting data on our every move seems to have given officials the slip. Snowden's exposure of the NSA's PRISM surveillance program has put concerns over phone and email privacy center stage. The Washington Post recently reported on another law enforcement tool flying under the radar. Facial recognition databases containing up to 120 million images can currently be scanned by local and federal law enforcement to help curb offenses from driver's license fraud to terrorism. This accumulation of facial biometric data adds to growing concerns over individual privacy. Craig Timberg is the Washington Post national technology reporter, and he's been covering the story along with Ellen Nakashima. Craig, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thanks for having me.
So your reporting found 37 states now use facial recognition technology, and at least 26 allow state, local, or federal law enforcement to search their driver's license registration databases. So clarify for us, these are not criminal databases.
That's right. These are databases that are created when you go get your driver's license and they take your picture. Now, it's not happening in New Hampshire. New Hampshire actually passed a law prohibiting any collection of biometrics by the driver's license registries. But in 26 other states, this information is collected, it's analyzed by facial recognition software, and police are able to either do searches or request searches against it.
So what does this technology capture?
It captures the shape of the elements on your face and their position. So the size of your nose, how the angles of it, how your earlobe looks, your hairline. And what it does is it basically turns your face into a string of data. And so later on, when all this information gets put in a giant database of 3 or 10 or 100 million different elements, when police come in later and have a picture from an ATM surveillance camera or from a Facebook page, that picture is then turned into data, and then the data is compared against the data, and they can come up with probable hits.
Can definitive identifications be made from this facial recognition technology?
No, it's certainly not yet. I mean, it's not like fingerprints where, you know, they dust it from a crime scene and they pull it out and they, oh, yeah, there's John Doe is clearly our burglar here. It's much more of a general investigative tool. I talk about in the story of a detective in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, who heard about a guy sort of being around his town, you know, behaving badly, and his nickname was Buddha the Shooter.
Mm-hmm.
And so the detective goes on Facebook, finds a webpage of what appears to be Buddha the Shooter, and they run that against their facial recognition database, which also includes mugshots. They find a mugshot of the guy. They go visit him, and they walk in, and they say, "Hey, Buddha." And Buddha says, "How did you know that?" And the detective says, "Well, we're the police."
Well, this software was advanced anyway as a tool in Iraq and Afghanistan, identifying insurgents there. What was the success rate there and here, where it is used by law enforcement?
You know, it varies wildly based on how good the underlying images are. One of the reasons why the driver's license photos are so important to the investigators is they're good pictures. People go in and they're, you know, they kind of want to look halfway decent. So when they turn over the driver's license at a bar or whatever, they don't look like total goofballs. And so then the question becomes, you know, what they call the probe image, which is the image that the police have later on, whether it's from a surveillance camera or whatever. If that image is also clear, then the software works pretty darn well. Now, there's lots of cases, and this was the case in the Boston Marathon bombing, where the surveillance video images were not good. They were grainy. The faces were off at strange angles. That one guy was wearing a hat and sunglasses. And so when the images are bad, the software really does struggle. I make the point in the story, though, that all of this stuff is getting so much better so quickly that it's only a matter of time before their ability to sort of deal with grainy images and all that is really going to improve radically.
These are not, as we mentioned, mugshots, but biometrics of licensed drivers and non-drivers if they want to board a plane or buy alcohol, for example. Do the police or any other law enforcement officials need to have probable cause to conduct these searches?
So the typical standard is you need to be able to assert a law enforcement purpose. Now, that's a much lower standard than probable cause, and it's a much, much lower standard than going to a court and getting a court order. Now, That said, the kinds of screens imposed by different motor vehicle offices really do vary. I talked to some states where they say, oh, well, we get 2 or 3 requests a year, and we look them over very carefully. And then I went to other states where, you know, I watch police officers from their patrol cars run these facial recognition searches, or even on their smartphones. In general, in the states that allow this, most people don't even know that when they have their driver's license photos taken, that they're essentially entering a perpetual digital lineup for the rest of their lives.
Well, that's one thing when they have their photos taken for the Department of Motor Vehicles. How about on Facebook or other social media? Is there any reason to believe that the images there might not be used for facial recognition in criminal investigations?
It really depends on your privacy settings and whether you're criminal suspect. I think we've all sort of had, you know, evolving relationships with Facebook over the years. It's worth going to a computer that you don't normally use and Googling yourself and seeing what sorts of pictures come up, because in many cases, you'll be surprised if something you put up there 2 or 3 or 4 years ago is there, or something that your friend put up 2 or 3 or 4 years ago is still there. And if you can Google it, the police can Google it. Now, if the police want to go in and retrieve, for example, data on a specific user, let's say they're investigating me for some crime, they need a court order for that.
I'm talking with Craig Timberg, who reported on law enforcement and how it's breaking ground in using facial recognition technology to combat terrorism and aid in its domestic investigations. He reported on the story for The Washington Post. Civil libertarians are really concerned about facial recognition being used in criminal investigations. Any comparison that you can make between the recently revealed NSA surveillance prison programs, you know, amassing our phone and internet data, with this kind of collection of faces?
Yeah, there are some similarities and there are some differences. Let me just start with the differences for a second, right? The NSA program was aimed mainly at foreigners, and while there was a lot of domestic data collected, it's mainly an outward-facing program, right? The driver's license photos are inward-facing, right? These are police officers, these are, you know, deputy sheriffs, and in sort of qualitatively, in kind, these databases are being used in different sorts of ways. I do think that the very common element of this is that people don't really understand what's happening, right? They don't understand that their data that they turn over for one function, say, getting a driver's license or doing a Google search or sending an email to a friend, that once it's out there in the ether, that it travels around the world again and again and again, it gets lodged in databases and servers that you don't control. And once that happens, once you've let go of that information, your legal right to that, or your legal right to say, no, so-and-so can't look at it, is extremely limited.
I'm wondering about ownership of these databases. I mean, they have to be housed somewhere, right? Can we imagine someone similar to a Booz Allen Hamilton contractor releasing this information or having access to it?
Well, forget them. What about the Chinese hackers, right? One of the things I cover privacy and security stuff here on the technology beat, and the last couple of years you've heard this rising cry, oh, the Chinese are into everything. They've gotten everything. They've stolen our fighter jet plans. They've gotten our emails. Well, I mean, who's to say that they're not hoovering up all of our facial images as well? I don't know what would stop them. If they thought it was useful, I assume that they'd go get them.
And what use can you imagine?
The key to all of this stuff is assembling identities, right? If an entity has your face and they have your web behavior and they have your email traffic, and, you know, I carry a smartphone, so all my GPS data, my location data is being emitted constantly to Verizon, right? If you can get that information, you can link it together, it's pretty darn powerful. Now, you could make the case, well, they don't really want to know about me. Am I interesting enough to either the NSA or the local police or the Chinese, for that matter, for the effort to be made? You know, in lots of cases, probably not. But I'll tell you, my point of view is that knowledge is really power. And it does kind of creep me out to think that anybody has the granularity of information about me that you could assemble.
Looking over the comments after your Washington Post article, there seems to be this mix of people who are really worried about the digital footprint that they're leaving and who could be collecting them. Others are saying, why not? I mean, we're catching terrorists. We're keeping people from committing other crimes. What's the big deal?
Yeah, the conversation gets awfully binary from my point of view. Like, you know, my mother is a retired teacher. She lives in Maryland, very blue state. She likes Barack Obama. You know, she's not creeped out by this. She's just, well, what do I do wrong? Who cares about me? And, you know, she has a point. I also think that when this technology is used in a targeted way, it can can be incredibly valuable, right? If you could have kept September 11th bombers off of those airplanes, well, that would have been a great thing, right? What the civil libertarians will tell you, though, is you have to kind of draw lines in that gray space. It's not enough to say, oh, either we have zero privacy and perfect security or perfect security and zero privacy. That in between those two poles, you can establish reasonable limitations. And that's what the Fourth Amendment is about. The Fourth Amendment came out of the experience of the colonists having the British rampage into their homes and take whatever they want and then trump up charges on them. So it's not facial recognition technology by itself that is the problem. It's when it's used in a way that's not limited and targeted. Now the government has databases of hundreds of millions of faces of Americans. Who's to say that they're not going to, you know, wire those into surveillance cameras someday? So you're going to a political event and you're there to rally for Barack Obama or Mitt Romney or whomever. Do you really want the government potentially having that sucked into a database somewhere? I'm not saying that that's happening now, but it doesn't take that much of a stretch of imagination to see the day when the databases and the facial technology and the cameras work together in such a seamless way that you could conceivably know where we are all the time.
Craig Timberg, National Technology Reporter for The Washington Post. I want to thank you so much.
No, it's been my pleasure. Thank you.
You can find more on Craig's coverage of facial recognition software and law enforcement at wordofmouthradio.org, including a terrific video and also a slideshow of some law enforcement officials in Florida using the technology on the ground. The links are at wordofmouthradio.org.